Good morning, everyone. On Sunday mornings, I have been talking on this book, Opening the Hand of Thought. This book is written by my teacher, and I'm one of the translators of this book. And we finished until page six, until the last paragraph of page 66, and in this section, Uchiyamaro discussed about seshin. The seshin is an intensive practice period. Here we have usually 5-day seshin, actually, from the December 1st or the evening of November 30th, we'll have a Rohat session that lasts 7 days. We sit from until the midnight of December 7th to kind of commemorate Buddha's enlightenment. During the session, we sit 50-minute period, and 14 periods a day, so quite a lot, for 5 days or 7 days. And then he introduced how he sat during the session, and he said there are 2 points we can learn, or not only learn, but experience during this session. First one is about time. During the session, when we sit in that way, time doesn't fly. It's slow. It's really slow. So we can enjoy the peaceful, you know, life, way of life. It's not busy at all. By experience this, we can see about the time from very different and much broader perspective of about our time. That is one of the most important element of our life. And another point, he talks about the things we can study or experience during this session is in Japanese, before self-power. He said before. That means, you know, we cannot, you know, sit 14 hours a day for 5 or 7 days with my self-determination or my willpower. But sooner or later, we have to give up my determination, and yet somehow we can, you know, continue to sit. That power or energy, that much deeper than this personal individual person or my determination or willpower support this body and mind and allow or enable us to sit in that way. But this before self-power in Zen teaching or Zen practice is a kind of unusual, because as a common sense in Japanese Buddhism, Zen is a typical self-power practice, and self-power is opposition of other power, and other power is the word used in Pure Land Buddhism, and this other power refers to the power of vow of Amitabha Buddha. So in the Pure Land Buddhism, they said self-power practice doesn't work. So we need to have a faith in Amitabha Buddha. Then our faith in Amitabha Buddha allow us to be born in the Pure Land after our death. That is a very basic teaching in the Pure Land. So in the Pure Land, self-power is negated. Only other power works. Since last time, I introduced what is the idea of other power, and in order to understand self-power, in order to understand before self-power. And I introduce the teaching in the Pure Land Buddhism, especially Shin Buddhism. Full name is Jodo Shinshu. Jodo Shinshu means school. And Jodo is pure land. And Shin is true. So this school is called True Pure Land School. And this is one of the English books about the Shin Buddhism, written by Taitetsu Unno. He is retired now, but he used to be a professor at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. And his father was a missionary from Japan to Hawaii and Los Angeles in the Pure Land temples for Japanese American communities. So Professor Unno was born in the United States, so he is an American. But when he was young, he met D.T. Suzuki, who was the great, not a monk, but a scholar who introduced Zen to the West. So Professor Unno started to study Buddhism in the influence of D.T. Suzuki. So from the very beginning, he had some influence of Zen. So even though he was a professor and also a Pure Land Buddhist priest, his understanding and explanation of Pure Land Buddhism is kind of an integration of Pure Land Buddhism and Zen Buddhism. So I think it's kind of interesting. And what Professor Unno is saying and what Uchamuroshi is saying about Zazen seems not exactly the same, but pretty similar. Anyway, last week, introduced what is the faith in Pure Land Buddhism, and I introduce a quote Professor Unno wrote in this book, River of Fire and River of Water. And he said, Pure Land Buddhist practice, faith and practice, is not so different from Zen or meditation practice in various Buddhist traditions. And he introduced one of the American author on the meditation practice, whose name was Mark Epstein. He wrote a book entitled Thought Without a Thinker. He is, I checked his book, he is a student of Jack Canfield, so he practices insight meditation. And he is also a psychotherapist. So his idea about meditation practice is pretty kind of understandable and accessible for American Buddhists. probably that is why Professor Uno quote this person's book, and he said, Pure Land Buddhist practice is not so different from what Mark Epstein wrote. And what Mark Epstein wrote in his book is as follows. Instead of running from difficult emotions or hanging on to enticing ones, the practitioner of bare attention becomes able to contain any reaction, making space for it, but not completely identifying with it because of the concomitant presence of non-judgmental awareness. So according to Mark Epstein, this is what we experience in our meditation practice. And I think in our just sitting, we have our same experience by letting go of thought. In this case, this thought does not simply thinking, conceptual thinking, but all different kind of emotions and feeling and everything happening in our mind. By just sitting, we don't control anything. Just everything, we just let everything come and everything go. We don't interact with those things, but we just sit. So all those thoughts or feelings are just coming and going. And as I always said, this is like when we drive a car, put a gear into neutral, then our engine or motor is still moving, but the car doesn't move. That is, I think, what we practice in just sitting. So we are not directly react what is happening in our mind, including emotion or feelings or any kind of philosophical, logical thinking. And Professor Uno said there Pure Land Buddhist practice offer the same kind of experience. And he introduced one of the examples of a Pure Land Buddhist practitioner. Anyway, before that, he says about the Pure Land practice as follows. This other power is a power of Amitabha with compassion and wisdom. And Amitabha, when he was a bodhisattva, he took a vow to save, accept all beings to his pure land if they have pure faith in his power of compassion. So Dr. Uno says, this compassion and wisdom of Amitabha empowers us, enabling us to cope with all kind of difficult challenges in life. The empowerment frees us to openly acknowledge our limitations and imperfections, even our addictions and neurosis. Through the work of other power, through the work or function of other power, we become ourselves truly. So, because of the work or power of function of other power, we become truly ourselves. To embrace our feelings without regret, remorse or feeling guilty. So we can accept the negative side of our life. Because we are accepted and embraced by the Amitabha's compassion and wisdom, we can accept our own egocentricities. Accept does not mean we need to be pulled by them. So this here is letting go, even though they are there. Egocentricity are there, still we can embrace it without being pulled by them. And he continued, because of this space and understanding provided us, the writings of Shin Buddhist abound with pure emotions, free exposed, joy, sadness, humor, sorrow, anger, foolishness, repentance, and gratitude. Liberated from the lingering effect of our karmic past, we move forward in life positively and creatively. So that is what current Buddhist practice of chanting Namu Amida Butsu and have a faith in that function of Amitabha's power. And he introduced one of the examples of Pure Buddhist practice. And the example was a woman who was an immigrant from Japan to Hawaii. And she was one of the congregation of the Pure Land Buddhist temples in Hawaii. Probably the temples, his father was a priest. Anyway, the person's name is Haru Matsuda. We have Mrs. Matsuda here, and she was born in Hawaii, so possibly this person was has some connection with that Matsuda-san we have. Anyway, she came from Japan to Hawaii and worked in a coffee plantation. And the labor that in that plantation was really hard, almost like a slave labor. So they had to work hard all day from the sunrise to sunset, and they had to go through a lot of difficulties. And this person, Haru Matsuda, was also a Pure Land Buddhist, and also he wrote haiku poems. Many Japanese people wrote haiku. Anyway, Professor Uno introduced two of her haiku poems written in her very difficult life as a worker in the coffee plantation. The first one is embraced by true compassion, I vowed never to complain. Thinking thus, again I complained. So, because she has a faith in Amitabha's vow, so she's very grateful to be embraced by the absolute compassion and wisdom. And therefore she vowed not to complain anything. But soon after that, even the next moment, he started to complain. But by saying, you know, I vowed not to complain, and yet next moment I complained. She knows that is not right, and yet she doesn't fight against it, and yet she doesn't follow that, you know, complaining and take action based on that complaining. But she accept it and acknowledge it and be free from it. I think that is the same thing we experience in our Zazen practice. You know, even when we sit this upright posture facing the wall, all different kind of thoughts are coming and going, and many of them are complaining. Or some of them are expectation. But by just letting go, letting come and letting go, we don't negate them, we don't eliminate them, but we see them without trying to control them. So all things are just coming and going. By doing so, in a sense, this just sitting and letting go is a complete kind of a rejection of those ego-centered thinking. But at the same time, this just sitting is a perfect embracement of all those things happening in our mind. So we are not pulled by those ego-centered, self-centered thinking and emotions, and yet we acknowledge it and embrace it and let it go. And that is the way we just be right now, right here. So in that sense, Fathishi Harumatsuda wrote in this poem, and what we experience in our Zazen is, I think, the same thing. And Dr. Uno says about this poem, the compassionate working of other power, that is Amitabha, the compassionate working awakened her eyes to human finitude, F-Y-N-I-T-U-D-E, finitude, human finitude, limited, imperfect, and mortal, contained within the all-sustaining power of Amitabha. So even with that kind of self-centered idea and thinking and emotions are embraced by absolute compassion of Amitabha Buddha. Having been shown her true self, so Dr. Uno used this word, true self. This is a word often used in Zen, not in Pure Land Buddhism. But he said, having been shown her true self and grateful for this insight, she vowed never to complain, but in that very instant, she found herself complaining. She was again shown her true nature. True nature means we are self-centered, ego-centered. That is our true nature. But at the same instant, realized that she had already been accepted by great compassion. In the words of Shinran, Shinran was the founder of their tradition, Jodo Shinshu. In the words of Shinran, all this the Buddha already knew. Amitabha Buddha already knew we are limited, conditioned, and self-centered, and yet the compassion of Amitabha already accepted and embraced us as we are. So all this the Buddha already knew and called us foolish beings, deluded beings of blind passion. So we are invited and accepted and embraced by this perfect absolute compassion. And Buddha already knew that we are self-centered, and Buddha said, that's okay. By knowing this, we can also embrace our negative feelings. And yet, we can follow the Amitabha's compassionate attitude toward ourselves and other people. And next haiku by this person, Haru Matsuda, is as follows. Rubbing, R-U-B-B-I-N-G, rubbing my eyes in the morning, I began complaining. Out jumped Namu Amida Butsu, and I really woke up. Probably, this in the very early morning, he woke up from her sleep, and he thought of her, painful, difficult day working in the plantation, and their, condition as a worker is really terribly, not simply hard, but unfair. So during that period, some of Japanese workers had a strike against the owner of the plantation. And the Buddhist temples, there are many Buddhist temples in Hawaii. Some of them are Pure Land Buddhist temples, some of them are Soto Zen temples. And those temples became a kind of a shelter of those workers, not as a, only a spiritual or religious center, but also the community center and also a cultural center for Japanese immigrants. So when I think she woke up thinking of her, difficult days, long day to just working in the plantation, I think she couldn't help but complaining, why I have to work so hard, why my life is so difficult. But out jumped Namu Amida Butsu. Somehow, just when she started to complain about her condition, jumped out, I think, almost automatically, or from her subconscious, this Namu Amida Butsu came up. Then she says, and I really woke up. So this really woke up does not mean woke up from the sleep on the night, but she woke up this true reality of human life. That means we are so much self-centered, and we have so much, negative feelings and idea against others. But that Buddhist teaching is we are living together with all beings. We are all interconnectedness. And in a sense, this other power or Amitabha's compassion is this network of interdependence, origination itself. Within that network, we are supported by all beings, and yet still we are so much self-centered. We kind of build a wall or fence around us and say, this is my territory, this tiny space is my territory. And we always calculate how much income we have and how much expenditure go out. And when we think the income is larger than expenditure or outgoing, we feel our life is okay. But probably in her condition, probably outgoing is much larger than incoming. So it's kind of very natural to complain, this is not fair. But when she started to complain, somehow, not from here, but from much deeper place of her life. Namu Amida Butsu automatic. Namu Amida Butsu means I take refuge in Amitabha Buddha. Automatically come up. Then she said she... And I really woke up to the, you know, reality of interdependent origination. About this height, Professor Uno says, the second poem is even more to the point. Getting up in the morning, Mrs. Matsuda must have felt the awesome tasks ahead of her, and she began to complain. At that very moment, out jumped Namu Amida Butsu. Through accumulated years of deep hearing is, I think, the translation of Monpo in Japanese. Monpo is very important practice. Not that, yeah, they don't call this a practice, but important part of religious life in Pure Land Buddhism. And Mon is here. And Ho, Po is Ho, same as Ho as Dharma. So hearing Dharma, the Dharma, repeatedly many times, billions of times. By hearing the Dharma take root in her deep consciousness. In order to sit the Zen, we have to come to Zendo, or you need a very quiet, calm place to sit the Zen. But for Nembutsu, they can do it anywhere. So Nembutsu is much, in a sense, much easier than Zazen. So they chant Nembutsu whenever, you know, they can, they could. By hearing the Dharma and chanting Nembutsu always, this teaching go down to even the subconsciousness, very deep layer of consciousness, and then they start to complain or something against the Dharma, they could kind of repent and chant Namu Amida Butsu. That is their religious practice. Dr. Uno said, through accumulated years of deep hearing, the Nembutsu had become part of her subconscious. Now it had surfaced to reveal her true reality. So it's not a matter she think that I should not complain. But somehow, almost automatically, Namu Amida Butsu or voice of other power come up from her heart. Then she wake up. So now it had a surface to reveal her true reality. Namu Amida Butsu affirms each Namu, or lost, confused, and complaining, within the great compassion of Amida Butsu. So Namu is taking refuge, that is, I take refuge. But Amida Butsu is the other power. So within this Namu Amida, chanting of Namu Amida Butsu, you know, there's a self and other power, absolute compassion, become really one. Then, within the great compassion of Amida Butsu, and Amida Butsu means immeasurable light and life. Amitabha, Sanskrit word Amitabha, the name of Buddha, means immeasurable or infinite light, or infinite or eternal life. So Amitabha means interconnectedness throughout time, space and time. And each saying of Nembutsu releases us into a boundless and limitless universe. And actually, our Zazen allow us the same way to release and allow us to open ourselves to this entire network of interdependent origination. Finally, Unno Sensei says, with a lifetime of deep hearing, Mrs. Matsuda became a truly awakened human being. It enabled her to live authentically, having come to know herself thoroughly. Come to know herself means her both positive and negative part of life. Rather than maintaining a superficial life filled with false expectations, she was fully aware of her self-delusion. Not because she was especially wise or enlightened, but because her true nature had been illuminated by immeasurable light and immeasurable life. So according to Professor Unno, this is the religious or spiritual life in the Pure Land Buddhism, and that is a function of the other power. Well, it's already 5 to 11. I'd like to introduce next chapter of this book, and in this section, Professor Unno talks about self-power. So that is his understanding of other power as a spiritual practice, not exactly the same but similar with the meditation practice, in which we can open to universal life, and by doing so we can embrace our egocentredness and be compassionate to ourselves and to other beings. And next he talks about the self-power. What is self-power in Pure Land Buddhism? And that is the meaning of this word. Self-power is used in Uchiyama Roshi's book. That's why I think it's important what is self-power in Pure Land Buddhism means. First of all, he said, the term self-power contrasted to other power should not be thought of as negating self-reliance in everyday life. That means negation of self-power does not mean negation of our effort within our daily lives. To become a mature, independent adult, we must rely on the powers developed within oneself, rational, psychological, and intuitive. So, self-power in Pure Land Buddhism is not negation of our improvement, our effort to improve ourselves, but it's something different. So he said, it is, this self-power is within the realm of the religious quest. It is within the realm of the religious quest that self-power becomes a real problem. So in our daily lives, we need to use determination, willpower, and make effort. But when we are inquiring the spirituality, this self-power become a problem. And according to Shinran's or Shin Buddhist teachings, it said there are 4 points about this problem about self-power. And according to Dr. Unno, he said, according to Shinran, self-power becomes manifest in several ways. First, whenever one is conscious of doing good, then we think we are doing good. That is a problem. First, whenever one is conscious of doing good in whatever form, including religious practice, even in the sayings of Renbutsu, self-power is at work. Unaware of the hidden ego-centered agenda, a person becomes self-righteous and arrogant, passing judgment on others as good or bad. So when we think I'm good, then that is a problem. Self-power is working in that thinking of I'm good. When we say I'm good, that means others are not so good. Or I'm better than I used to be. So here is a judgment. And this, I'm bad is a problem, a negative, but within this idea of I'm not good, there's a openness. But when I said I'm good, I'm okay, I'm better than others, then there's a kind of a separation between me and others. That is one first way self-power works. And second is, whenever one believes in one's ability to amending confusion, amending or fixing confusion in acts, words, and thoughts, those are three parts of our life which create a karma. So if I think, I can fix my life with by actions with our body, mind, and thought. Body, mind, and speech. Those are called three karmas. If we think I can fix, that means I can achieve some kind of a spiritual goal by our own effort, then in that self-power is working. So whenever one believes in one's ability to amending confusion in act, words and thoughts, through some means, such as meditative practice. So according to this teaching, if we practice meditation or even Nembutsu or Namu Amida Butsu, self-power is at work within there. So Fen Uchamaro said, you know, during our Zazen session, we find, you know, I cannot practice this with self-power. Therefore, we need to awake to before self-power. So at this Professor Uno is saying, and Fat Uchamaro is saying in opening the hand episode is the same, that we cannot do this. In the case of Nembutsu, it's easy to chant, but in the case of Zazen, like doing session, it's very difficult. But by doing difficult practice, sometimes we feel, I'm okay, or I can do this. Or, you know, because I practice in this way, such a hard practice, I'm better than others. Then that is the practice based on this small self-power. So in that sense, Pure Land Buddhism and our Zazen practice is the same thing. We awake to the power beyond this individual self-power. I don't know how much time, so third one. Third, whenever one becomes prideful in the ability to know oneself, this is the work of self-power. So if we think, I can understand me, I know who I am, then that is the working of the self-power. This includes the claim to freely recognize the limitation, imperfection, and fallibility of oneself through the power of rational self-reflection alone. So if we think we can understand who I am or what we are with our rational, logical, conceptual thinking, then that is the self-power practice. Because the reality of our life is beyond our thinking, beyond our rational thinking, or our beyond any conceptual discriminative thinking. And still I think I can, then that is the self-power. That means we need to see the limitation of our rational or logical or kind of a scientific way of thinking. Of course, it works in certain realms, but we need to understand there's the reality is beyond that realms in which our rational thinking is valid. That's why we need a spiritual practice or a faith or a practice. And the final one is, when one's religious practice, no matter how committed and dedicated, becomes ineffectual and unproductive, self-power has reached a dead end. So if we practice with this self-power, with our own personal determination or idea or understanding, and our own personal effort, then soon or later we'll reach the dead end. And to me, this is important, to face the dead end until the dead end of self-power is really important. Otherwise, we cannot go beyond self-power. So even in our Zazen practice, you know, in the beginning, we practice based on I want to this, or I want to study Dharma, or I want to become a better person, or I want to find a better or more healthy, wholesome way of life. And we call that is a bodhicitta, or way-seeking mind. And with this motivation or aspiration, we cannot practice. And yet, sooner or later, we will find that motivation itself is a problem. That it's still separation between other power or totality of interdependent origination. I think I can do it. I can find the truth. I can improve myself. And if we practice with that attitude for a while, we find we can do it. We cannot do it. You know, to do session once or twice can be done with my self determination, but we cannot sit, you know, 14 hours a day, hours a day for 5 days, 10 times a year for 20 or 30 years. There's no possibility, you know, my determination can do it. But somehow, by kind of supported with this much larger and deeper power, and in the Pure Land Buddhism, that is called other power. But in Dogen's teaching, that power is called Zenki, or total function. Within this interconnectedness, me and other beings are working together as one power. So there's no such separation between self-power and other power. Is important both in Pure Land Buddhism and also our Zen Buddhism. Reached a dead end. It is at this time that the self is opened up to the working of other power. That is all pervasive and all sustaining. So this other power includes self-power, and yet self-power cannot reach other power. This is a kind of a strange thing to say. But we cannot reach the absolute by our personal ability. But from the very beginning, we are included within that absolute power. And because we don't have much time, I go to the end of this chapter, and it said, Professor Uno said, self-power rejects the teaching of the Buddha as irrelevant and meaningless for our everyday life. That means I don't need the teaching, they're just teaching. We can do it by ourselves. We can control and improve and support our lives by our, you know, ability. That is, I think, very basic idea of modern, you know, culture or civilization. But I think most of people started to question about this kind of a common belief in the modern times. So we need to really awake to the other power, including self-power. So this is not a negation of our individuality, but this is awakening to the larger kind of a context in which we are living as an individual. and he continues, as long as self-power is alive, as well the ego self resists the Buddha Dharma, putting up all kind of defenses. But sooner or later, the time will come when we will all realize the bankruptcy of self-power. I really like this expression, bankruptcy of self-power. When we do so, the Dharma will seep into our body and mind to infuse a new and vital sense of life in us. So this is a teaching about self-power and other power in at least one person's interpretation of Pure Land Buddhism. You know, because he was influenced by D.T. Suzuki or Zen Buddhism, possibly his interpretation or understanding might not be the mainstream Pure Land Buddhist understanding. I know when I was in Massachusetts at Vale Zendo, he was, Professor Uno was a sponsor of our visa to leave, to get the permanent visa. So I had a really close connection. And when, you know, then Rinzai Zen Master Joshu Sasaki Roshi visited Massachusetts. Sasaki Roshi visited Massachusetts and had a session once a year at a Catholic monastery in there. And he also gave a public lecture. When Sasaki Roshi gave the read the session at a Catholic monastery, Professor Uno was a translator. So he deeply understand Zen, and he himself practiced the Zen. And as I said last week, his son, whose name was Mark Uno, when Mark studied at Kyoto University, he came to my temple and practiced session with me. So in Taitetsu and Mark Uno's understanding of Pure Land Buddhism, Zen and Pure Land is not two separate religions. And this is one, two different type of practice, but truly Buddhist practice. And Uchiyama Roshi had a kind of a same position about Zen and Pure Land, even Zen and Christianity, I mean Buddhism and Christianity. Anyway, that is what I have to say about other power and self-power. And from next time, I return to this text. Any question or comments, please?
So you made the distinction between the chanting practice, which is easier to do because we can do it anywhere, right? Mm. As opposed to Zazen practice, mm. where you said you need a quiet place.
Yeah.
And I guess that made me question, what is your definition of Zazen practice? Because I've always thought we can do that anywhere. Like even sitting in the airport, you know, with a lot of commotion around us, we can actually sit Zazen, or standing in line, or lying in a hospital. But maybe that's not what you mean when you say Zazen. So what is your definition?
Of Zazen?
Mm.
Sitting in the Zendo.
Okay. Like this.
That is a traditional understanding of Zazen. We need to kind of keep the certain period of time cut off from our daily lives. Save certain time, period of time, whether to sit in a zendo or in your room at home. You need, certain period of time and practice with certain postures. That is what, not I mean, but traditionally Zazen means. Of course, we can interpret Zazen in different ways. And actually, you know, because Uchemuroshi was physically very weak person, he often couldn't sit. That means he couldn't do Zazen in the kind of a common understanding. So when he couldn't sit, even when he was in bed, he practiced chanting, not Nami Amida Butsu, but Namu Kanzeon Bosatsu. Kanzeon Bosatsu is Avalokiteshvara. And he said, this is a portable Zazen. That means chanting Namu Amida Butsu or Namu Kanzeon Bosatsu is not different from Zazen. And so that is another interpretation of what Zazen is. Zazen is not a physical posture done in certain place during certain period of time. Of course, we can do Zazen even when we sit at the, desk in front of the computer. But to me, Zazen is when we discuss, or not discuss, but think of easy and difficult practice, because traditionally it said that Nembutsu is easy practice because they can do anywhere without any particular effort. But Zazen is difficult. But in a sense, I think it's opposite. Zazen is easier than Nembutsu. Because Nembutsu can be done anywhere, anytime. It can be done with habit. Without any, intentional determination, I practice this. But because Zazen needs that kind of, intention, this is traditional interpretation of Zazen. Because of that, Zazen is easier. Because we can keep certain period of time for this practice only, and we can really focus. But because we can chant Nembutsu any time, any situation, the important point in Nembutsu is pure faith, pure fixed, stable faith. Without faith, Zazen is just a movement of mouth. Or Dogen said it's like a croaking of the frog in the spring rice paddy. So Nembutsu doesn't, chanting Nembutsu doesn't work without this deep, solid faith. Otherwise, this is just a chanting, just a making sound or a mouth movement. But in Zazen, even if we don't have such a deep, solid faith, somehow, we take our body and mind in certain place, in front of Buddha or Bodhisattva. Somehow, without such a pure, fixed faith, we can practice. That's why, in that sense, I think Zazen is easier than Nembutsu. To keep such a pure, solid faith, constantly is a really difficult thing. Does it make sense?
Although maybe to practice Zazen for many years, you need some kind of faith too.
Of course. Yeah, self-power practice doesn't work.
Not for long.
Yeah. But in the case of Zazen, our Zazen, we don't need to believe, you know, that person, the other person whose name was Amitabha. Their faith is based on, to me, this kind of a story. But in our Zazen practice, we don't need to face trust in that kind of a story. That, for me, that is a kind of easier part of Zazen practice. Unless we accept that kind of, you know, story or kind of myth of Amitabha Buddha and his vow, you know, parent Buddhist practice doesn't make sense. But in our Zazen, we don't need to face in that kind of, in a sense, fabrication. Of course, for Pure Buddhists, it's not a fabrication. But in Zazen practice, we don't need that kind of faith. We need a trust in the, of course, in the Buddha's teaching and the tradition of people who had been practicing this. And also we need a trust within our, in our life. It's not our thinking or our self-power, but we need a faith or trust that we are living together with all beings. And yet, this is not a simply a myth, theory or story, but we can feel this or experience this within our practice and daily lives. In that sense, to me, you know, Zazen is easier than Pure and Buddhist practice. When I just started to study Buddhism, I also studied Pure and Buddhism, especially Shinran's teachings. It was very difficult for me to accept, you know, other power, because that is based on that story.
Professor Uno's definition is a little different, right? When he talks about Amitabha as this pervading compassion that expresses itself.
So that story is not a problem for true, real, pure and Buddhist. But as a student, I was 19 years old, and before that I a little bit studied Christianity. And I found it difficult or almost impossible to become a Christian because you know, I had to believe that kind of myth of creature of the universe and Christ, you know, sacrifice, and he can, you know, save all beings. I couldn't believe that. And when I read Pure and Buddhist texts, I found the same kind of teaching. So once we accept Pure and Buddhist teachings, then we need to go beyond that story. In the case of Christianity, might be the same. But at the entrance, to me, it's difficult to enter. But in the case of Zazen, I don't need to believe anything, but I can do it with this, just this body and mind. So for me, it was kind of easy to enter. But after entering, it's not so easy. Okay. Any other question or comment? Okay, thank you very much. Next week, as I said, the Rohat session start this the evening of November 30th, that is Tuesday. So next Sunday, we are during the session. so we don't have a Dharma talk. But if you wish to join us sitting, please come to sit. You're welcome.